Chapter 2. Train with your brain, not pain. Just a few years ago, most positive trainers began their dog training careers using force-based methods, jerking on choke chains, and otherwise physically or verbally intimidating their dogs into submission. Happily, more and more trainers today are first-generation positive trainers, growing up in a world where dog-friendly training is readily available and never experiencing the trainer who insists that they have to hurt dogs in order to train them. Most trainers who started their training careers using coercive methods, but who have since crossed over to positive training, had an epiphany at some point, often triggered by an experience with one of their own dogs. Mine occurred in the early 1990s. Thanks to our terrier mix, Josie. Josie was always a joy to train. Although terriers are generally known for being strong-willed, Josie had always been willing to work very happily with me and showed little of the independence that is a characteristic trait of the feisty terrier group. Healing, coming when called, and staying were no problem for her. She breezed through her CD, companion dog, title with ease, never scoring below a 192 out of a possible perfect score of 200 points. A dog can earn an obedience title at each level by passing, with a score of 170 points or higher, three separate competitions scored by three different judges. The dog handler team enters the ring with a perfect score of 200 points. And the judge deducts points for errors as he instructs the team to perform the various exercises. But we hit a bit of a stumbling block when we began working on her CDX, companion dog excellent. Josie was never what trainers call a natural retriever. In the open class, dogs must retrieve a dumbbell on the flat as well as over the high jump. Josie simply wasn't interested in picking up the dumbbell. My trainer at the time convinced me to use the ear pinch, a training technique that involves pinching the ear over the choke chain until the dog opens her mouth to protest, then popping the dumbbell in her mouth and releasing the ear. This is a classic example of the learning principle that behaviorists call negative reinforcement, where the dog's behavior, opening her mouth, makes a bad thing, the pain in her ear, go away. Josie, being smart as well as sensitive, soon learned to pick up the dumbbell on command in order to avoid having me pinch her ear. That obstacle conquered, she excelled in the open competition and earned her CDX in three shows, including at least one high in trial and an impressive best score of 197.5. The retrieve problem came back to haunt us, however, as we prepared for utility. This class includes a scent discrimination exercise in which a dog must select from among a group of similar articles the article that her owner has touched. The exercise is done twice, once with leather articles, once with metal. The leather articles presented no problem for Josie. In no time, she could easily find the article with the proper scent from among a group of several. But she hated the metal articles. She refused to put them in her mouth. We tried coating them with plastic spray to make them less offensive, but she still refused. My trainer urged me to pinch Josie's ear harder. So pinch I did. Still, she refused. Then one afternoon, when I got out the training equipment, Josie, who had always been a happy and willing worker, hid under the deck and refused to come out. Josie's behavior was a rude awakening for me. What was I doing to my dog? Were a few scraps of satin ribbon and a certificate to hang on the wall worth the damage I was doing to Josie's psyche, our relationship, and my soul? I quit training and didn't do any serious training for several years. Then I started hearing about a new method that used treats, not choke chains. I checked it out for myself, and I liked it. I was back in the training game. Josie never got her utility title. Somehow it never again seemed that important. We said sad farewells to her in the spring of 2001, when old age took her from us. In the last years of her life, however, when I got out her training toys, her eyes again sparkled, and she would dash in happy circles around the yard. She was always a willing worker, even when I used old-fashioned methods. But after she eloquently showed me the errors of my methods, and I learned new, gentler ways, she was again my joyful partner in training. I've realized that ribbons and trophies are just not as important to me as they once were. One of these days, you may see me in the obedience ring again with another canine partner, maybe even on the agility course, in the rally ring, or the canine freestyle dance floor. We may even win a ribbon or a trophy or two. But that won't be our goal. Our goals will be to have fun and to enjoy each other's company. That's worth far more than all the trophies in the world. Operant conditioning. Over the last few decades, modern trainers have increasingly utilized positive training techniques based primarily on two of the four principles of learning developed in the 1930s by behavioral scientist B.F. Skinner. Before you start your positive training, it's important that you have a basic understanding of Skinner's theories. Skinner defined the principles now known as operant conditioning, called that because the subject, the dog you are training, can operate on or manipulate his environment by his behavior. He can make things happen, either good or bad, by choosing behaviors that are either rewarded or punished. In describing the principles of operant conditioning, behaviorists use the words positive, negative, reinforcement, and punishment. In common usage, positive usually means good, and negative means something bad. Punishment is considered bad and often involves the use of physical force, and reinforcement means making something stronger. To behaviorists, the terms have somewhat different connotations. To a behaviorist, punishment is something that reduces the likelihood of a behavior being repeated, while reinforcement is something that increases the likelihood of a behavior being repeated. When something is added, it is called positive, whether that something is desirable, such as a treat or a toy, or whether it's undesirable, such as a verbal or physical correction. Conversely, when something is taken away, it is referred to as negative, whether that something is desirable, a toy, the owner's attention, or a privilege, or undesirable, a collar that chokes, or a pinch to the ear. When you combine those terms, you get the following four principles of operant conditioning. Positive punishment. The dog's behavior makes something undesirable happen, and a behavior decreases as a result. The puppy pees in the house, so the owner yells at him and throws him outside. Yelling and tossing the dog outside might reduce the likelihood of the puppy peeing in front of the owner the next time, but it won't necessarily reduce the likelihood of the puppy peeing in the house. Positive reinforcement. The dog's behavior makes something desirable happen. As a result, the behavior is likely to increase. The puppy pees outside in his designated bathroom spot, so the owner says yes in a happy tone of voice and feeds the dog a cookie. Giving the dog a treat in immediate proximity to the act of peeing outside will increase the likelihood of the puppy peeing outside in his bathroom spot the next time. Negative punishment. The dog's behavior makes something desirable go away, and the behavior is likely to decrease as a result. The puppy jumps up to get his owner's attention, and the owner turns his back on the puppy. The puppy is less likely to keep jumping up if the behavior makes the owner's attention go away from the puppy. Negative reinforcement. The dog's behavior makes something undesirable go away. The behavior is likely to increase. The dog is gagging at the end of his leash because the choke chain is strangling him. He stops pulling on the leash, and the choking stops, as long as the owner doesn't tighten the leash. The dog is more likely to stop pulling on the leash the next time, unless the reward of getting to go where he wants with a tight leash outweighs the reward of not choking. All animals, including dogs and humans, can learn through any and all four of these principles of operant conditioning. We all want to make good stuff happen, and to make bad stuff go away. Coercive methods that use large doses of positive punishment and negative reinforcement have persevered over the last century because they worked well enough with enough dogs to be considered successful. Force-based training comes with a number of pitfalls, however, and because of these pitfalls, there are lots of dogs and owners for whom punishment-based methods don't work well. Because people care about their dogs, they feel bad when they punish them. Positive methods help you feel good about training your dog, and they work. The pitfalls of positive punishment. A lot can go wrong when you use positive punishment as one of your primary training tools. Punishment can cause aggression and fear. Punishment doesn't provide your dog with enough information on which to act. It also isn't specific to the behavior that you actually desire, and it might only work to stop the behavior in your presence. Furthermore, you, as the trainer, must time punishment perfectly in order for it to be effective at all. Plus, a corrective punishment must be one that you don't have to repeat over and over, because some dogs can become so tolerant or so damaged by the punishment that it becomes completely ineffective. Let's briefly examine each of these problems with positive punishment. Positive punishment can cause aggression. Your dog can easily associate you with the punishment and learn to fear you. Fear is a primary cause of aggression, and your dog may start biting in anticipation of, or as a reaction to, the punishment. The more you punish the aggression, the more fearful your dog becomes, and the more he fights back in self-defense. If your dog is confident and assertive rather than fearful, he may resent your efforts of physical force and resist aggressively, setting up a dangerous and escalating cycle of conflict that may end up with someone getting hurt. Positive punishment doesn't provide very much information. Let's say your dog is standing at the front window, wagging his tail and barking. You punish him by yelling at him for the barking. But how does he know whether he's being punished for the barking, the standing at the window, or the tail wagging? Let's say your brand new puppy squats and pees in front of you on the living room rug. You grab him, spank him, and throw him outside. You think you just taught him not to pee in the house. But what you really taught him was that peeing in front of you isn't safe. Next time, he'll run to the back bedroom to pee. And in the future, he may be very reluctant to pee in front of you when you take him for a walk on leash to relieve himself. Positive punishment may only work in your presence. Dogs are pretty smart and can learn to associate punishment with the person who delivers it. Let's say you've punished Sleeper numerous times for getting on the sofa. When he sees you enter the room, he quickly jumps off the sofa. You think he's being sneaky, getting on the sofa when you're not there. Obviously, he knows better, because he jumps off and looks guilty when he sees you. Or does he? What Sleeper has really learned is that it's not safe to be on the sofa when you're in the room because you get violent. His guilty look is actually appeasement behavior, not guilt. He knows you're angry, and he's using body language that has a good chance of turning away anger. However, rather than understanding he's not ever supposed to be on the sofa, he knows it's quite safe and comfortable to be on the sofa when you're not there, because bad things never happen if he gets on the sofa when you're gone. Positive punishment isn't very specific. When you punish your puppy for peeing in front of you, you are only telling him what you don't want him to do. Don't pee in front of me. There are still a lot of places in the house where he can pee that you wouldn't approve of. If you house train through punishment, it could take a long time to punish him in every spot he's not supposed to pee in. It is better and faster to teach him through positive reinforcement what you do want him to do. Pee over here, puppy. Yes, here's a cookie for peeing in the right place. The proper timing of positive punishment is critical. In order for any correction to be effective, it must be given during or immediately after the behavior that is intended to change. Immediately after means within 1 or 2 seconds. If the correction is too late, your dog won't make the connection to the misbehavior, and you will be punishing the wrong thing. Let's say you walk in the front door after work and find that Rambo has ripped the sofa cushions to shreds. He runs up to you, happy to see you, tail wagging furiously. Angry at him for ripping the cushions, however, you grab him, shake him, hit him with the limp cushion, and yell a few choice words. Then you drag him to the back door and throw him outside. You have just punished him for greeting you happily at the door and taught him that you are very dangerous when you first come home from work. You've taught him nothing about chewing up sofa cushions. By the way, a correction is positive punishment. Pretending that it isn't is just another way of trying to make you feel okay about hurting your dog. Feeding your dog a cookie after you punish him is not training with positive reinforcement, as some trainers might have you believe. Of course, the timing of your rewards is important to successful positive training, too. The difference is that an occasional poorly timed or too generous treat does no harm, whereas a single poorly timed or overly strong correction can do serious, even permanent damage to the relationship between you and your dog. An effective correction must also be strong enough that it requires no more than 1 or 2 applications. A collar correction is a quick jerk on the leash. This abruptly tightens, then releases the choke chain around the dog's neck. It is used to punish the dog for inappropriate behavior, such as moving out of heel position, and if done properly, should be hard enough to stop the behavior without causing permanent physical or mental damage to the dog. Therein lies the dilemma. How do you know how hard is hard enough for a particular dog? When you have jerked too hard, the damage is already done. Dog personalities range from very compliant, or soft, to very tough and assertive. Dogs in the middle of the range seem to be relatively capable of tolerating coercion-based training methods. The very soft dogs, however, are easily damaged, mentally, by the application of positive punishment, and when they have been overcorrected, regaining confidence and trust can be extremely difficult. At the other end of the range are the tough dogs. These dogs don't give in easily. In fact, when corrected physically, they are likely to fight back. What do you do when your 150-pound Mastiff decides he didn't like the collar correction and lets you know in no uncertain terms? Plenty of small dogs won't put up with physical force either. They aren't quite as intimidating as big dogs, but they can still do plenty of damage. Some old-school, force-based trainers insist that you have to overpower the dog with force, using things like scruff shakes, where the handler grabs the sides of the dog's neck and shakes him, and alpha rolls, where the handler flips the dog onto his back and holds him there until he stops resisting. Or, if necessary, by hanging the dog with a choke collar until he submits or collapses into unconsciousness. Most owners, thankfully, are unwilling or unable to inflict this kind of abuse on their dogs. These abused dogs frequently end up biting or becoming enough of a threat that they are surrendered to animal shelters, where they are usually euthanized as dangerous and incorrigible. Sadly, if these dogs had been trained with non-confrontational methods, they might have been fine. The benefits of positive reinforcement. Sunny was a 12-week-old golden retriever puppy whose owners had called me in a panic. Their veterinarian had told them that the pup was dangerously dominant and that they needed to put him in his place now or he would grow up to be an aggressive adult. The vet had told them to use the scruff shake and alpha roll on Sunny. Now Sunny was growling and snapping at them. They were terrified of their 3-month-old puppy, and he was terrified of them. When I did an in-home consultation with them, I found a normal golden retriever puppy, whose personality leaned toward the assertive end of the temperament range. Sunny was just confused and frightened of his owners, who had suddenly turned unpredictably dangerous. The little pup thought he was fighting for his life. As soon as his owners stopped forcing and punishing Sunny and started showing him what they wanted and rewarding him for it, he eagerly responded. Positive trainers believe that it is our challenge, as the supposedly more intelligent species, to get our dogs to voluntarily offer us the behaviors we want without the use of force. When they offer the desired behavior, we reward it, thereby increasing the likelihood that the behavior will be repeated. Eventually, we can put the behavior on cue, so our dogs will offer it when we ask for it. Finally, when the behavior is rock solid, we can reduce or phase out the use of food as a reward. The question, then, is this. Would you rather hurt your dog to train him or feed him treats? Seems obvious, doesn't it? Yet for years, trainers have told owners that you couldn't train dogs using food. If you train with treats, they declared, your dog would only work when there were treats present or when he was hungry. Both of these claims were wrong. People have been sold a whole philosophy of dog training that says dogs are power-hungry dictators who will take over your household if you don't force them into submission. Heaven forbid you allow your dog on the furniture. Next thing you know, old-fashioned trainers would have you believe you'll be sleeping on the floor while your dog stretches out on the comforter in the master bedroom. My own dogs are allowed on the furniture, and they are permitted to sleep on the bed. And they haven't taken over the house yet. We've been told that our dogs should do what they are told, because they know they have to, and because they love us. They need to know they don't have a choice. They have to do what we say, or bad things happen. This is just plain bunk. First of all, your dog always has a choice. Plenty of force-trained dogs choose not to do as they are told and are willing to suffer the consequences. If punishment worked all that well, you'd never have to punish your dog more than once. In fact, one of the keys to effective punishment is that it must work with just one or two applications. If you have to punish your dog for the same behavior over and over, you are just teaching the dog to tolerate punishment. And you will have to punish him harder and harder for it to have any effect. Ongoing punishment is abusive. The majority of dogs you see in today's obedience competitions are compulsion trained, at least to some degree. Fortunately, this situation is changing. If you've ever watched an obedience trial, you've seen plenty of those compulsion-trained dogs choosing not to do what they are told. Of course, if any trainer tells you she can make your dog 100% reliable, run away fast and find another trainer. Dogs are not machines. They are living, thinking creatures. We humans, the supposedly more intelligent species, are not 100% reliable. We make mistakes. Should our dogs have the right to bite us on the ankle when we do? Of course not. But then, why on earth should we both have the right to expect our dogs to be perfect and claim the right to hurt them when they are not? Like us, our dogs have good days and bad. Sometimes they're tired or in pain and can't do what we ask. Sometimes they are easily distracted, and sometimes they'd just rather play their own games than ours. Dogs just want to have fun, Redux. Dogs just want to get good things and avoid bad things. Through pain and force, you can teach your dog that if he does what he is told, bad things don't happen. On the other hand, you can teach him without pain that if he chooses to do as he is asked, good things do happen. Take jumping up on people, for example. Lots of dogs jump up. Jumping up is one of their most annoying behaviors. Why do dogs jump up? To greet people, because face-to-face greetings are natural dog behavior, and because it's exceptionally rewarding to them. They get to touch you, and you pet and hug them in return. Sometimes, however, when their feet are muddy and you have on your favorite business suit, they get yelled at. Still, even yelling is attention, and they are rewarded often enough that it's always worth a try. Old-fashioned methods for teaching a dog not to jump up include kneeing him in the chest, stepping on his hind paws, hitting him on top of the nose, and holding his paws until he struggles to get away. Some of these methods may work for some dogs. Other dogs, however, may think a knee in the chest is an invitation to a rousing game of rough and wrestle. Hitting a dog on top of the nose may make him hand-shy, and stepping on his fast-moving hind paws may lead to an injury. Paw-holding teaches your dog that hands on paws is a bad thing, which doesn't make it any easier when you, or anyone else, tries to clip your dog's nails. I want my dogs to associate me and my hands with good things, not bad. Listen to the Concept 1 section of Pat's Positive Training Principles in the beginning of the book again. Remember, you want to reward the behaviors you want and ignore or prevent the behaviors you don't want. Instead of physically punishing your jumping jack, ignore him by not making eye contact, by not speaking to him, and by turning your back on him, until he does something good, like sits, and then you reward with treats and attention. If you do this consistently, Jack will learn to run up to you and sit as hard as he can for attention. Dogs repeat behaviors that are rewarding to them. Sometimes, of course, you can't ignore an inappropriate behavior. If Jack is a 90-pound black Labrador and he is about to jump on 93-year-old Aunt Martha, you obviously have to intervene and manage his behavior to prevent immediate damage to Aunt Martha until Jack is better trained.